Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Coca-Cola FEMSA fourth quarter and full year 2017 conference call. As a reminder, today's conference is being recorded, and all participants are in a listen-only mode. At the request of the company, we will open the conference up for questions and answers after the presentation. During this conference call, management may discuss certain forward-looking statements concerning Coca-Cola's FEMSA future performance and should be considered as good faith estimates made by the company. These forward-looking statements reflect management's expectations and are based upon currently available data. Actual results are subject to future events and uncertainties, which can materially impact the company's actual performance. At this time, I would now like to turn the conference over to Mr. Hector Trevino, Coca-Cola FEMSA Chief Financial Officer. Please go ahead, Mr. Trevino.
Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us to discuss our fourth quarter 2017 results. Let me start by saying that 2017 was a very challenging year. However, our positive results clearly underscore our ability to adapt to complex environments characterized by raw material cost pressures, especially sugar prices in Mexico, macroeconomic issues in many countries where consumers continue to suffer from currency volatility and higher inflation, such as in Mexico and Argentina, and a complicated consumer environment where limited disposable income leads them to shy away from our categories, such as in Colombia and Brazil. Nevertheless, we continue to successfully navigate these adverse environments to maintain market share, reflecting our capacity to satisfy consumers' diverse lifestyles with a variety of beverage choices through our winning multi-category portfolio. Our strategic affordability initiatives, building on our robust platform of returnable presentations and entry packs at magic prices, and our excellent point-of-sale execution. All of these capabilities, coupled with our financial discipline to ensure a more lean cost structure, enable us to protect our company's profitability for our shareholders while we continue to work to strengthen our capital structure and financial flexibility. Our Mexico and Central America division reported a quarterly volume contraction of 1.4%. For the fourth quarter, our Mexico operations volume contracted 2%, while our Central America operations achieved 6% volume growth. In South America, we reported volume growth of 8.7%, including the results of our acquired Bompar franchise in southern Brazil. For these divisions, Argentina's volume remained flat. Brazil reported 7% organic volume growth, and Colombia and Venezuela reported volume contractions of 6.8% and 17.2% respectively, as we continue to experience a difficult consumer environment. In the Philippines, we achieved volume growth of 12.6%, building on our 2.8% growth in the fourth quarter of 2016. For the fourth quarter, our consolidated reported revenues increased by more than 11%. This was in line with a 12% increase in gross profit, a margin that we successfully protected even with cost pressures in some countries. Our operating income increased by 5.8% due to higher freight costs and higher fuel price across our territories and the negative effect of Venezuela for the quarter. Our operating cash flow grew 4.6% for this quarter. These reported figures include our results from Venezuela, the Philippines, and our acquired Bompar franchise territories in Brazil. As we announced, as of December 31st, 2017, the company changed the method for reporting Coca-Cola FEMSA de Venezuela to fair value in light of the economic environment prevailing in that country. Until that date, we have been recording a foreign currency translation charge in equity, which has been reclassified as a non-cash one-time item to other non-operative expenses in our income statement, in accordance with IFRS. This resulted in a majority net loss of approximately 24 billion pesos and a loss per share of 11 pesos and 54 cents for the quarter. On a comparable basis, earnings per share were 1 peso and 85 cents versus 1 peso and 39 cents in the same period of the previous year. It is important to highlight that Coca-Cola FEMSA de Venezuela will continue operating in Venezuela and its fair value will be reported in the investment in shares line of our balance sheet going forward. In an effort to explain the organic performance of the business, we exclude the negative impact of Venezuela, the positive results of Bompar that are only reflected starting December 2016, performing the results of the Philippines, and on a currency neutral basis. Our consolidated comparable revenues rose 5.7%, driven mainly by average price increases in Mexico and Argentina, and coupled with volume growth in Central America, Brazil, Argentina, and the Philippines, while our comparable gross profit grew 9.2%. Moreover, our consolidated comparable operating income increased 13.3%, and our comparable operating cash flow rose 12.5% compared with the fourth quarter of last year. Notably, our comparable net income attributable to equity holders of the company was 3,895,000,000 pesos, and earnings per share were 1 peso and 85 Mexican pesos, an increase of 32.7% compared with the fourth quarter of 2016. I will briefly discuss the highlights of the quarter for each of our operations. In Mexico, we delivered 5.1% revenue growth, resulting from pricing ahead of inflation that was partially offset by a low single-digit volume decline as a result of extraordinary weather in the quarter. In November, we increased prices ahead of inflation to compensate for additional costs and expenses. We saw a slight shift from single-serve to multi-serve presentations in our sparkling beverage mix compared to 2016, while our non-returnable to returnable packaging mix remained the same. Coca-Cola Sin Azúcar or No Sugar continue its positive performance, outpacing the volume of Coca-Cola Light. With this in mind, we continue to increase the mix of non-caloric beverages in our cola portfolio. As part of our broad portfolio and aligned with our value versus volume strategy, we increase our transactions ahead of volumes with our 354 milliliter and 235 milliliter cans now available for both colas and flavors. Fostering innovation in our flavor sparkling beverages, we launched Coco and Nada in December, a new flavor within our Nada segment that is now available in 600 milliliter and 2 liter presentations. As part of our strategy to become a multi-category beverage leader, we enter a new beverage segment with our successful integration of the ADES portfolio in our points of sale in Mexico, offering our consumer an array of plant-based beverage choices. For the quarter, our Mexico operations top-line growth enabled us to protect our operating income, even with higher costs and expenses, resulting mainly from unfavorable foreign currency hedge, higher sugar prices, which increased close to 16% compared with the same period of 2016, and higher concentrate prices and incremental diesel and gasoline prices. In Central America, our volumes grew close to 6%, building on positive volume for the year. For the quarter, our four operations in the region reported volume growth. Notably, we achieved double-digit growth in Guatemala, coming from the implementation of our pre-sale model. Driven by our affordable strategies in Central America, our price mix had an impact on our revenues as compared to last year, also affected by the translation effect of the depreciation of the currencies as compared to the Mexican peso. During the quarter, our sparkling beverage growth was mainly driven by brand Coca-Cola and its extensions, highlighted by our recent launch of Coca-Cola Sin Azúcar in Costa Rica, Panama, and Guatemala. The integration of Monster into our portfolio generated incremental volume in the still beverage category. During the year, we launched Monster in Nicaragua, available in a 473 milliliter can. In our water portfolio, we reported high single-digit volume growth, coming from the positive performance of our one-liter PET presentation. In Central America, better volume and a benign raw material environment were offset by a change in price mix driven by our affordability initiatives and our route-to-market implementation that increased our cost of serve. Our South America division continued to show positive signs of recovery in Brazil and in Argentina, while Colombia and Venezuela continue to experience a complex consumer environment. In Brazil, our fourth quarter results show a positive trend compared with the previous two quarters, with 7.4% organic volume growth. Including our Bonfire franchise territory, our volume grew close to 21% for the quarter. Indeed, we closed the year with four straight months of positive organic volume growth, with transactions outpacing volumes and positive performance across all of our beverage categories. Our revenues in Brazil grew 14.3%, as our average price per unit case in local currency was lower compared with the year earlier period due to promotions and discounts for the peak season. Our launch of Fanta Guaraná has been a success. This major launch, our operation's largest in many years, now represents more than 7% of our flavored sparkling beverage portfolio. In Brazil, Monster is outperforming expectations after beginning from a very low brand base. We significantly increased coverage across our channels, closing the year with encouraging volume growth December 2017. We successfully integrated ADES into our Brazilian operations portfolio. ADES offers an array of nutritious choices for our consumer to enjoy, including soy juices, soy milk, and kids products. Together with our positive volume performance, benign raw material and currency cost, and cost and expenses reductions, we achieved positive profitability in Brazil, significantly expanding our operating income and EBITDA margins. A year after integrating Bompar, our plan continues on track, and we expect to deliver more than our targeted synergies. We rapidly improve our point-of-sale execution while successfully expanding our portfolio of returnable PET presentation with significant volume and coverage gains throughout the territory. In Argentina, we reported flat volumes for the quarter. Our strong volume growth in October and November was offset by a volume contraction in December. Through our focus on more interactions with our consumers through affordable entry packs, our transactions rose ahead of volume, and our single-serve presentations continued to grow in our mix. During the quarter, volume of brand Coca-Cola was positive thanks to the performance of Coca-Cola Zero and Coca-Cola Original. While satisfying our consumers' diverse lifestyles with a wider array of choices, Fanta Zero and Schweppes Zero continue to deliver strong results in the flavor sparkling beverage category. Our still beverage category continued to deliver strong results thanks to the integration of ADES portfolio, the recent launch of Cepita Zero, and the positive performance of Hi-C Juice brand. In the water category, we recently launched a new 500 ml PET presentation for our King brand. With the reformulation of our brands, our zero and low-calorie portfolio reached 30% of our sparkling beverage volume mix in Argentina. Our revenues grew close to 4% as we maintained pricing in line with inflation. Top-line growth and cost and expenses efficiencies enabled us to increase our operating income and achieve EBIT and EBITDA margin expansion. In Colombia, which is suffering the lowest GDP growth since 2009, a prolonged negative consumer confidence is affecting our industry, resulting in a 6.8% volume contraction. On the right side, our cola mix and our market share in the sparkling beverage category peaked at historical levels in December. Our affordable strategy through returnable PET presentations is now available in all of our Colombia's major cities, enable us to more than double our volume in this package. Additionally, we have increased our mix of non-caloric options, such as Coca-Cola sin azúcar, which is growing, achieving double-digit volume growth throughout the year. In addition, better sugar prices combined with a stable Colombian peso and an aggressive reduction in our cost and expenses positively contribute to our operating income. In light of Venezuela's prevailing economic environment, we recorded a volume contraction of 17% for the quarter. Our local team continues to embody our values, passionately serving our consumers, and working every day to strengthen the presence of our portfolio in the market. In our Asia division, for comparable purposes, we are describing the performance of our Philippines operations as if it were consolidated last year, considering the full 3 months year over year. For the quarter, our volume grew 12.6%, with October and November showing strong performance, and December generating double-digit growth as our consumers prepare ahead of the tax reform that started in January 2018. During the quarter, We achieved double-digit volume growth in the sparkling beverage category, driven mainly by double-digit growth in brand Coca-Cola and flavors. Our entry packs of 200 milliliter and 300 milliliter single-serve PET presentations continue to deliver strong results, increasing our number of transactions while improving our mix of single-serve presentations to almost 40% of our sparkling beverage mix. Our water portfolio, which represents 11% of our still beverage category, generated double-digit volume growth thanks to our Wilkins Distill, Wilkins Pure, and our recently launched Wilkins Delight brand of flavored water. Our still beverage portfolio, excluding powders, grew more than 30%, driven mainly by Minute Maid Fresh. Even with our improving mix of single-serve presentations, our revenues grew less than our volumes, as our prices remained relatively flat in nominal terms compared with the fourth quarter of 2016. Our positive top-line performance, together with favorable sweetener and PET prices and cost and expenses efficiencies, enabled us to improve our operating income and EBITDA and expand our margins. As many of you know, as of January 1st, 2018, the government started the implementation of a comprehensive tax reform in the Philippines. Within this fiscal package, a tax on sugar sweetened beverages was enforced. 6 Filipino pesos per liter for drinks using sugar and artificial sweeteners, 12 Filipino pesos per liter for drinks using high fructose corn syrup. As such, since January 1st, 2018, we have passed this excise tax on to the end consumer to an average price increase over more than 20%. Now, regarding our financial results. Below the operating income line, our comprehensive financial results decreased 10.5%. This decrease resulted from our strategy of reducing our exposure to net U.S. dollar-denominated debt by swapping it for Mexican pesos and Brazilian reais, mitigating the effect of foreign exchange volatility on our income statement. As we change the accounting method for our Venezuela operation, in future financial statements, we will not have an impact on the line of monetary position in inflationary subsidiaries. Our net leverage ratio ended the year at 1.74 times, as we reduced our net debt during 2017. On February 21st, yesterday, our board of directors agreed to propose for approval at the annual shareholders meeting held to be held on March 9, an ordinary dividend of 3 pesos and 35 cents per share to be paid in two installments in May and November of 2018. As we continue our journey of transformation to create value across our entire value chain, our centers of excellence continue to deploy initiatives ahead of plan. In only 18 months, we implemented our commercial digital platform across 6 countries and more than 7,000 routes. We plan to roll out this platform to the rest of our countries in 2018. We are enthusiastic about the preliminary results from our tailored consumer-oriented initiatives, our agile opportunity detections, and our better resource allocation. Moreover, we deploy our distribution and logistic platforms in Mexico and Brazil, and we are testing these platforms in Argentina and Panama to reduce our cost and enhance our value chain flexibility. Now let me close with some key remarks on our results for the year. As I said, 2017 was a very challenging year. Nevertheless, Our positive, solid results clearly underscore our ability to adapt to complex environments. Our organic results improved compared with 2016, with slightly lower volumes but better gross profits in most of our operations. Mexico's volume remained flat, with a positive first half offset by a complete second half of 2017. However, excluding the Philippines from our results for 2016, our operating income remained flat, despite the effects of foreign exchange fluctuation and increased sugar concentrate and fuel costs. As expected, Brazil performed positively in the second half of 2017, with strong growth in profitability offsetting other countries' results in our South America division. We are encouraged by these results looking ahead into 2018. In Argentina, our volumes remain flat compared with 2016, marked by an improving trend in the second half of 2017 compared with the first half of the year and a positive outlook going forward. In Colombia, despite our volume contraction, we continue to gain market share with the growth of brand Coca-Cola, supported by our returnable strategy and to contain costs to improve our margins. Our Philippines operation outperformed in 2017 after an election year in 2016, achieving 3.8% comparable volume growth and operating income and EBITDA margin expansions of more than 200 basis points. It is still too early to assess the impact of this tax reform on our business, as there are other components of this reform that impact our consumers in a positive way. Furthermore, we saw continuous progress on all of our strategic and operational fronts. We reset our competitive edge in Central America, including our introduction of Frisell in Guatemala. We increased our point-of-sale execution and drove affordability throughout all of our territories, focusing on returnable presentations. We grew our non-caloric mix, and we continuously progress with our digital transformation. Guided by our strategic framework, we are committed to reinforce our leading market position as a global beverage company through our diversified portfolio, to transforming our operating model through our centers of excellence, and to driving our cultural evolution that will enable us to continue capturing both organic and inorganic growth and creating sustainable value for our shareholders now and into the future. Thank you for your continued trust and support. And, operator, I would like to open the call for questions.
Thank you. The question and answer session will be conducted electronically. If you would like to ask a question, please press star followed by the digit 1. If you are using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Once again, star 1 to ask a question, and we'll pause for a moment to assemble the queue. And first we'll hear from Lauren Torres with UBS.
Hi, and good morning. Hector, if you could talk a little bit more about performance in Mexico. I think you noted that volumes for brand Coke were down 2.5% in the fourth quarter, and we also saw a modest decline in still. So can you just talk about, you know, the trends you're seeing in Mexico, and as we think about 2018, if things should look a bit weaker off of a couple strong years? And also, continuing on Mexico, we had pressures on the cost side and on the expense side last year. Should we think about some of those persisting, or things should get a bit better, and thinking about a recovery of lost margins this year versus last, in light of maybe some of these factors getting a bit better? Thanks.
Good morning, Lauren. Good question. Mexico, let me try to reflect on what we are expecting for Mexico. In 2000, 18. The first half of the year will have a very tough comparison because last year performance of Mexico, volume-wise and price-wise, was very good. If you notice, on a quarter-by-quarter basis, it was basically the third and the fourth quarter that were impacted in our Mexico operations. There is a mixed bag of reasons on that. Obviously, we had the very difficult situation with two earthquakes in September and a couple of hurricanes that hit the country with a lot of rain. Importantly, when you segment the different areas of Mexico, you see a very clear underperformance on the states that are near to all the oil-related industries, especially Tabasco and Veracruz, a little bit in Oaxaca. So not surprising, the states that have the lower performance in terms of GDP growth are having the lowest performance in our mix of states. If you isolate the north part of our territory, which is the center of Mexico, is having very strong performance. It's one of the top performance areas of the country for the Coca-Cola system. And obviously, Mexico City is the area where you have all the confluence of all competitors, very aggressive marketing initiatives, etc. So, having said that, Lauren, what we are seeing is very tough comparison the first quarter, a little bit on the second quarter, and then easier comparison this year versus 2017 on the third and fourth quarter. When we compare with other CPG companies and some of the retailers, the numbers that we delivered in the fourth quarter are similar to what other companies are doing. It's a consumer that was hurt by very high inflation that was totally out of control. Remember that Banco de Mexico is shooting for a 3% inflation rate and we hit 6.7. That was the consumer that was affected by oil prices and gasoline prices. And we have started to see in some of the retail information we have a better performance in this year. Specifically in our operations, volumes for January and February are soft compared to last year, but again, we are comparing versus a very difficult volume trends that we saw last year. On the margin side, the big impact that we have in Mexico, let me put it this way, Mexico was, of the 10 countries, the one that had the most flexibility on passing prices to the consumer. And that's where you saw much better pricing improvement versus the year ago. But at the same time, we have the extra cost of these gasoline and diesel price increases and a very tough sugar or sweetener environment. 2017 versus 2016, sugar prices increased between 16% to 17%. And if we compare versus 2015, sugar prices have increased close to 40%, or a little bit in excess of 40%. So one of the potential benefits that we see for this year, 2018, is that we are starting to see declining sugar prices because Mexico sugar prices have been totally out of synchronization with the international markets. We are starting to see these prices starting to decline, and that's one of the positive inflection points that we could see in 2018. We have to remember that we have in Mexico, our second increase on concentrate costs starting July. And that will certainly have an impact on our cost structure, and we need to continue analyzing how to improve our margins despite that incidence increase. So having said all that, Lauren, I think that the summary for the expectation for 2018 is a very difficult first half in terms of comparing volumes. I think that we will have a more benign raw material environment, especially sweeteners. We have the additional concentrate cost, and with all of that, I think that we will be able to maintain our margins during 2018 to those that we have in 2007. I hope that I answered your question with these comments.
Yeah, very clear. Hector, just one other part to that question was the brand Coke volumes. Is there anything specific to that number, or it's just inclusive of your other comments?
No, I think that in general, the trends that we are seeing, and that's basically the same in all the territories, it's a sparkling volumes being flat or slightly negatives, and some growth in the water category and in the stills category. Sometimes in some of the countries, important growths. In Mexico, we are seeing important growth in the stills and important growth in water. And as you said, sparkling suffered a little bit during this year, during this quarter. I don't think that there is nothing to worry. We have reviewed the statistics of the preference of the consumer for our brand, and they are good. They are as healthy as they were a few years ago in terms of what we call the brand love score and the consumption trends. We are, as you know, in every country, we have this trend of, and it's not different in Mexico, we have this initiative of bringing an affordable product to our consumers, and therefore the big push for returnability that we are pursuing in every country, including Mexico. So I don't think that brand Coca-Cola is necessarily suffering any specific. I think that it has to do more with weather related and this situation at the end of the quarter, that we have a colder weather than what we have, and in our budget we are not seeing anything specific with brand Coca-Cola, any specific for us to worry about that our that brand.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
And next we'll hear from Martha Shelton with BBVA.
Hi, thanks for taking the question. I was wondering if you could comment on the level of profitability that you think you need to achieve in the Philippines in order to continue to maintain operations. I'm just trying to get a sense for, you know, given that the put option expires in January of 2019, you know, what you're thinking about in terms of, you know, what you need to achieve in that market in order to you know, exercise the call or exercise the put option. Thanks so much.
Good morning, Malta. It's a tough question. Let me give you some of the facts. Fact number one. As you said, we have a put option over all 2018. So in any period during 2018, we can exercise the put. Fact number two, we have a call option that ends in 2020. And we could exercise that option. Very important for us at this moment in time is fact number three, the performance of the Philippines is the better the system has had in the last 15 years. So both the Coca-Cola Company and Coca-Cola FEMSA up to December of last year were very happy with the way the business was going. Fact number four is that everything is changing starting January 1st. and it's too early to really be able to evaluate or to value what is the fair value of the Philippines under these circumstances, because as I said in the opening remarks, we have some positive trends in the tax package that was passed in the Philippines, basically more jobs because a lot of infrastructure being built during the coming years, tax breaks for the lower parts of the poorest people in the Philippines. But on the other hand, we have this very high tax on soft drinks, very high tax on oil and gasoline, and taxes on tobacco and alcohol. So it's too early to understand what the full impact of this new tax bill will have on our industry. The dialogue that we have started, and it's still too early, with the Coca-Cola company is that given these difficulties, that we should explore different possibilities, including, and I want to remark that we are just starting to have this conversation with the Coca-Cola company, including the possibility of extending the periods for these options that we have, both the put and the call. I think that, in my opinion, and obviously we need to negotiate this with the Coca-Cola company, the best outcome for the system is not to be pressured, but is a specific situation that started in January 1st, and have a little bit more time to digest and to understand the implications for the Filipino market, for the Filipino industry, soft drink industry. I think that's where we are right now. We have this option that you clearly described. It expires in January 2019, basically to put back the at the same price that we paid 5 years ago, in dollar terms, the Filipino asset, the Philippines asset. We have the option to acquire the rest of the Philippines. And again, as I said, 2017 was a very good year in terms of improvement and really getting this feeling that we are understanding better and better the how to operate in this region. So we will keep you informed on how this dialogue with the Coca-Cola company evolves, and certainly by next quarter conference call we'll have some news on that front.
Great. Thanks so much for your answer. I appreciate it.
Thank you much.
I will next hear from Isabella Simonato with Bank of America Merrill Lynch.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for the call. If we can move a little bit to South America, Hector, if you could comment on the volume performance in Brazil, how much was organic this quarter, and how you're looking for performance throughout 2018, if you could discuss your view for consumption in general of soft drinks. And I'm not sure if you can give any update on Heineken as well. Thank you.
Hi, Isabella. Let me start with the CSDs and then we go into Jaime. In Brazil, we saw what I think is a very good performance and pretty much in line to what we were expecting at the beginning of 2017. You remember we said we think that we hit the bottom. That's what we were saying at the first quarter last year. And we were expecting a better trend in the second half. And that's really what happened. If you look at organic volumes in Brazil, we were growing around 7% year over year. When you include the volume of Bompar, that was not included in our 2016 numbers. The reported volume growth in Brazil is very large, it's 21%. So, but organically, and we need to be careful with that, and that's why we do all this analysis of the comparable figures to isolate this one-time events. So the organic number is 7%. For next year, let me just again comment on this 2017. And this 7% volume was achieved through a combination of maintaining magic prices, introducing returnable PETs, that has brought our average price per case a little bit down. So when you look on a reported basis, volumes increase 21%, as I said, but revenues increase around 40%. That give you an idea that our average price per unit case is lower in Brazil. But that's where we wanted to be, is we consciously are taking the decision to improve the affordability of our portfolio through returnable packages and the introduction of small packages for the what we call the entry packages. No? Having said that, we continue to see good performance going forward in Brazil. Volumes during January have been strong, somewhere around low single-digit numbers. Volume growth for Brazil is a good number for our budget. We think that we will maintain prices at those levels with inflation. With respect to the Heineken situation, there's really not much we can discuss at it this time. We still have an obligation to keep the confidentiality of the process. As we said in the last conference call, the agreement that we have with Heineken provides for mechanisms to resolve the differences. And what I can say at this moment is that we continue to sell Heineken beers as of February. We need to wait for these mechanisms that are embedded in our contracts to resolve the situation. And that's basically what I can say right now.
Perfect. Thank you.
And next we'll hear from Raphael Shin with Morgan Stanley.
Hi, Hector. Thanks for the call. I just have a quick question on the Brazil beer. I see that, you guys had still a very strong fourth quarter with revenues growing almost 30%. So I was just wondering if you can provide us some color on, which brands are having a lot of momentum. Is that coming mostly from pricing and FX or volume? Any color on, I guess, Brazil beer growth could be would be really helpful. Thank you. Hello?
Yes, good morning, Rafa. Yes, good morning. Sorry, I have the phone in mute and I didn't notice. Brazil beer. We continue to have very strong performance of all the brands, but mainly is Heineken and Amstel brands. What has happened is that there's this trend with the consumer where I don't know if the right word is the reformulation of our competitor beer. I don't know if the right word is reformulation, but the fact that they use different grains is apparently, so far the information we have from the marketplace is that the consumer is not necessarily liking those new formulas. And Amstel beer is growing very importantly from a very low base. And Heineken beer Heineken brand continues to perform very well. But it's, in general, all brands are doing fine. But it's part of the volatility and dynamics that you see in the marketplace normally, no?
Oh, okay. And any specific channel where you're growing more?
No, it's in all channels. Remember that the paderias in Brazil, which is a very important on-premise market, and bars, we are growing with soft drinks and with beers, important in that segment, in those channels.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
Thank you.
And next we'll move on to Alex Robarts with Citi.
Yes, hi everybody. Thanks for taking the question. One on Brazil and the other on sweetener. So if we think about, you know, this soft drink industry recovery in Brazil this year, how are you thinking about the pace of operating leverage recovery? In other words, after this multi-year contraction in the industry, where are you in terms of capacity utilization? And I guess there aren't a lot of prior examples of coming off of such a deep recession in Brazil, but I mean, how do you gauge and think about the pace of getting back to more, you know, normalized utilization rates? Is it a multi-year, process? It'd be really interesting to hear your thoughts on this. Where are you now, in other words, in terms of capacity utilization? Where do you think you could be by the end of the year? And how long does it take to get to a more normalized level? So that's the first question. The second, you know, is on sweetener. You talked about the sugar trend in Mexico with some helpful color. When we think about high fructose, your dollar cost for high fructose this year, if you could tell us what that is shaping up to be in Mexico versus last year, and then just kind of your sugar outlook and trends for South America this year would be very helpful. Thanks a lot.
Good morning, Alex. In terms of the capacity utilization, you are reading very well the situation in Brazil. Brazil went through a three-year recession in our or reduction in the size of our industry and our company in terms of volume. And remember that we built a state-of-the-art plant in the state of Minas Gerais 2 or 3 years ago. So Brazil is one of the countries where we have the lowest utilization of our production capacity. On the other hand, we have done some investments to get rid of bottlenecks that we have in distribution centers. We have acquired some distribution centers so that we avoid renting a space. And in general, especially cities like Sao Paulo are complex in terms of space. So we do have some limitation in with respect to warehouse, but right now we are okay after some of the investments that we did. So, but the business is warehouse space, etc. We do not have the same spare capacity as we have in production capacity. So going forward, basically it's very good for us because as we increase volumes, we would just start filling up some of this extra capacity that we have, and conceptually those cases will be golden cases in the sense that the cost structure and the infrastructure is basically the same that we need. We do not need to have major capital expenditures going forward because of a lack of capacity in Brazil. With respect to your second question, with respect to sweetness, especially in Mexico, when I said that in some of these remarks that sugar prices have increased close to or in excess of 40% over 2 years and around 16% last year, I'm referring to basically cane sugar. High fructose have continued to have very stable prices. I'll say that it increased 1 or 2% last year in dollar terms. obviously we have to the volatility of the currency on those prices. And as you know, we have a strategy to continue rolling over partially some of the exposure we have to these raw materials in terms of entering into hedging some of this dollar exposure in every country, but also in Mexico. No? So the equation for sweeteners in Mexico was a very large increase in cane sugar prices over the last 2 years and kind of stable high fructose prices in dollar terms with the volatility that is embedded because of the FX. Going forward, what we are starting to see is that because of this disconnect that the sugar price has from international prices, we are starting to see little by little lower prices on Mexico on cane sugar. And high fructose, we are seeing a very stable, again, prices for 2018. We have been in conversation with our suppliers, and prices are stable in dollar terms. Some of the other countries, Alex, for example, Colombia, we have seen an important reduction in cane sugar prices after a couple of years where sugar prices were, again, very high compared to international standards. And Brazil prices are pretty much in line with international prices. So we are seeing a good environment in Brazil for prices, and in Brazil, similar to what we do with respect to currencies in Mexico and Colombia, in Brazil, we are able to hedge sugar prices. So we do have some hedges for 2018 that are at reasonable levels according to the mark-to-market that we have on those is positive. No? So I think that describes very well the sweetener environment for the countries. The extra element that I want to add is that it's probably more medium and longer term. The Coca-Cola system and I'll say the whole industry is looking at ways of reducing the caloric content of the beverages that we sell to our consumers. The consumers are evolving. It looks like there are a bunch of consumers that like the full flavor of original flavors, but there are consumers that prefer a reduced calorie content on their drinks. So in general, I'll say that more, again, medium and longer term, you will see a reduction in the amount of sugar that we need to buy, because we expect that the mid-cal and zero-cal will be growing in our portfolio mix. Thank you, Alex.
Thank you. Got it.
And next we'll move to Antonio Gonzalez with Credit Suisse.
Hi, good morning, Hector. Thank you for taking my question. I just have two quick ones. First, a follow-up on the Philippines. I presume that part of the strong volume performance that we saw in the fourth quarter was just some of your clients building up inventory ahead of the tax increase, no? So I wanted to ask if you'd be able to comment what you've seen so far in 2018. I mean, are you seeing a decline in volumes worse than what you should expect for the rest of the year as this inventory buildup gets depleted, or do you think that the rate of decline has normalized already? And would you have any guesstimate, I guess, at this point that you could share in terms of what sort of elasticity you would be expecting, or it's too early to share any of these points?
Good morning, Tony. Yes, as I point out in the remarks, clearly, the double-digit performance in December, in my opinion, was also influenced by the fact that the tax, everyone, the retailers knew that the tax was coming starting January 1st.
Mm-hmm.
So having said that, January was a month where we saw declines of around 17 to 18%, having increased prices in excess of 25%, increased prices to the consumer because of the tax impact.
Mm-hmm.
So in general, we were expecting a little bit higher decline because we think that elasticities in a country like the Philippines that has very low per capita income or lower per capita income than some of the Latin American countries, and lower consumption per capita, in other words, the use of soft drinks and the normal diet is high compared to Asia, but is low compared to Latin America. So we were expecting elasticities, higher elasticities. So at the end of the day, Tonio, what I would say is too early to know. If there was some inventory built up. We were surprised a little bit that volumes in January only declined 17-18%. We were expecting a higher number given the price increase that we passed to the consumer. But the other fact is that some of the competitors have had some disarray with their pricing strategies. And one of the consumers increased prices in excess of the tax and then reduced the price again by the end of January. So the industry is still, I guess, stabilizing and getting into, again, in an equilibrium. What has happened right now is that we have passed almost all of the tax impact to the consumer. Because of maintaining some price points, we are a little bit short of passing the full effect of the tax. And because of that, now we have in the marketplace something that we haven't had for many years, which is parity prices with Pepsi Cola and RC Cola in some of the packages. Over the last 5 years, we have our product price a little bit ahead of our competitor. And in this price adjustment and this, let me use the word, disarray that was created during January with everyone running to move the price list and all of that, that is what was created at this moment in time. The conclusion for me, Tonio, is still too early to fully get an understanding of what the impact of this will be. Okay?
That's very clear. Thank you. And if I may just very quickly follow up on Venezuela as well. Beyond the rate that you use to translate results and the method that you use to consolidate, can you give us a quick update, please, on what's the status of your lines and warehouses and production facilities? Are you permanently shutting down any lines at the moment, or that's not the case?
The short answer is we are having a lot of problems finding spare parts, but all the production lines, all the distribution centers continue to work with very low capacity utilization. Remember that in Venezuela, it's very difficult to adjust headcount, as you can imagine. No? So we have our four production plants, all of them running. In theory, since we were selling close to 20 million unit cases per month and now we are selling 5 or 6, in theory we could have shut down some of the facilities. We are not doing that because we need to understand what the future of Venezuela is. All production plants are working. We are maintaining workforce. We are using bolivars to pay for salaries. We are using bolivars to buy raw materials. And I think that the decision that this board of directors, following the recommendation of management, of basically the consolidating Venezuela from our numbers, is an accounting adjustment. But basically what we want to do is to have a much more stable income statement going forward, as we will not be reporting or we will not be consolidating Venezuela in our P&L. So you will only see a line in our balance sheet saying investment in shares. That's the value we have. Right now, that's around 1 billion pesos, around $50 million. And the only impact that you will have going forward in our P&L is in case fair value will call for an increase or a decrease in the value of that investment in shares that we have in our balance. So I think that given the difficulties in operating in that environment, I think that we will bring much more stability, I guess, to our P&L. I will not say transparency because we've always been very transparent and isolating the Venezuela as a single operation so that everyone understands what is happening there. And as we said in the remarks on our press release, it's just an accounting adjustment, and we will continue to operate in Venezuela as normal. Again, selling products, collecting revenues from our clients, using the bolivars we collect to pay salaries and to buy raw materials, and let's see what the value of this operation might be in the future, no?
This is very clear. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And next we'll move to Luca Cipicia with Goldman Sachs.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my question. Just a quick one. I was hoping you could share some comments about the dairy segment. Not so much about the quarter, but how do you see that sort of category development and the relevance within your portfolio, not only in Mexico, but maybe also in Brazil that now is starting to get better. You made now an inroad in plant-based beverages. Dairy seems to be an area that is somewhat underrepresented in Brazil compared to other markets, and you know, even looking at some of your peers. And some assets came up a few months ago. I guess you didn't participate in that opportunity, but I was curious to see how you see that category going forward, how important it will be, and whether it can also have some role to play in Brazil in dairy.
Good morning, Luca. Good question. Dairies, it's a category that is very different from soft drinks, but very, compatible with our capacities. Basically, especially when you look at ambient products, because you can use, again, the red truck and the capillarity we have, and the number of pieces we do, the devices we have with our presenters to manage an increased number of SKUs. So clearly, dairy is a very important category in the future of our company. Where are we? We have Estrella Azul in Panama that has not been performing that well financially. We are in a very important transformation phase. We have a new state-of-the-art plant that will be up and running basically as we speak. By mid-year, we'll finalize the closing of the old plant and starting the new one. So in Panama, we have this issue of building a new plant and still operating in the old plant, and starting to open some of the lines in the new plant and have it double number of people because of the two plants. We have Santa Clara in Mexico that is growing very well, is doing very well market share-wise. We're, again, very small base, but as we have access to the number of stores with the products that we have, volume is increasing double digit importantly every month. In the Latin America system, we also have Tony in Ecuador, where we are deriving some learnings. And we have Verde Campo in Brazil, which is a very important element in our design of the value added dairies going forward. The innovation that we can derive from Verde Campo, it's very, very important. So the efforts that we are doing as a system is how do we better, let me use the word integrate in the good sense. Integrate meaning derive good practices, products, examples of what people have done in Ecuador, or examples of the things that we're doing wrong in Panama, the things that we're doing well in Mexico. And as a Latin America system, how can we improve from there? And obviously also to consider the fact that we have, with our partner, the Coca-Cola Company, a tremendous array of formulas and brands that we can start deploying. And let me give you an example in Mexico. We are using this flavor milk that normally was to attract kids and to use that in the so-called lonchera in Mexico, the bag that the kids will take to school. And we are presenting now a new formula in a plastic and a full body label product. It's a flavor drink for young adults and adults, which we are targeting with new formulas. We are launching under the Barista brand a ready-to-drink coffee, a cold coffee drink that we think will be successful and have a very good price point, a niche product that we have good profitability. So those are the kind of things that we are targeting to develop in the future. And certainly Brazil, it's an important market for that. There is all this controversy of should you be present with fluid milk in order for you to be able to have value-added products in the marketplace, or can you just use this, can you just be present in the value-added drinks without having to compete in the more, I guess, supermarket fluid white milk products, no? So at the end of the day, this is more or less what we are thinking. I think that in general, we are very optimistic of the future of dairies within our portfolio. And as I said, the fact that the Coca-Cola Company has all over the world other products, including the Fairlife products in the U.S. where we have formulas, I think that will position us very well to better serve this opportunity or this category in the future.
And Hector, just it's very clear. Thank you for the discussion, the explanation. Just on this last point about, you know, value add with milk, without milk, you know, how can you separate or be successful in the value add without the rest? You know, the willingness to maybe sort of embrace the dairy category more broadly in markets such as Latin America, that resistance, is it more from sort of a Coca-Cola global strategy standpoint, or is it something that, you know, the bottlers, you don't see as necessarily the, you know, the successful way to do it? I think it's a fair question. You know, at some point, if you want to have scale, you can not have one without the other. I guess that would be an argument. But, you know, when is this view? I think Tony in Ecuador is a little bit of both. It's got more balance. But when do you think this view is going to become more clear if you want to scale the dairy business?
Look, in general, what I can say is that we have worked together with the Coca-Cola Company and other bottlers to really understand better all that is involved with theirs. As I said, we have not such good experiences as with Panama, very good experiences like with Santa Clara in Mexico. We are very clear that at some point in time, will have to scale this business, and probably that will imply M&A transactions. But that has not been fully defined. So some of the transactions that have happened recently probably were not at the right time for us because we are precisely in that definition phase.
Clear. Thank you. Thanks so much.
Thanks.
And next we'll hear from Yat Soros with Bradesco Bank.
Good morning, everyone. Thanks for taking my question. Hector, I was wondering if you could go back a little bit on Argentina and in Brazil as well and talk a little bit about prices. How should we see the environment in 2018? And do you guys expect to be a little bit more aggressive in terms of pricing? I mean, here your competitors are getting a little bit more discount in order to resume growth. Can I think a little bit more that you're going to, you know, prices are being in line above inflation? How should we see that for 2018? And my second question, I understand you can't speak much about the Heineken process, but if you talk a little bit about your plan B, I mean, are you negotiating with other third parties to provide distribution services? Can we think that you're going to compensate for those revenues? How should we see this? Thanks.
Well, the second question I didn't follow. The first one is very clear, pricing, but let me answer the pricing and then you ask me again the second question. Pricing in Argentina and Brazil. Going forward, the strategy for 2018 is to continue pricing individual packages with inflation or a little bit ahead of inflation. In Argentina, it's a little bit more difficult given the level of inflation that we have. I mean, inflation is coming down importantly, but during 2017, we saw inflation hitting 25%. So that implies increasing prices at that level. So some months you are a little bit ahead of inflation, some months you are a bit below inflation. But in general, the strategy is to price with inflation. In Brazil, inflation has come down importantly. And the strategy is the same. However, in Brazil, we are pushing very importantly for returnable packages. That might bring the average price per unit case a little bit below, just because of a mix effect. So Brazil's strategy will be, again, to summarize, price individual packages according to inflation, to maintain prices in real terms of the present levels, and then we might see a little deterioration of the average price because of mixed effect. And can you repeat the second question, please, Joel?
Thanks. For the second question, basically, I just want to understand if you have a plan B, a backup plan for, I mean, if the Heineken process goes sour, are you considering going to, you know, other third-party industries, and there are other beer companies or maybe even other categories that you're willing to provide distribution services in order to compensate for you know, the beer revenues that you might lose in case the Heineken agreement, you know, is terminated.
Yes, you are. Right now, it's a difficult question because obviously a plan B has crossed our minds, and we need to be prepared for that. But right now, all the efforts are focused on finalizing this difference that we have with Heineken. As I said in other conference calls, our read of the agreement that we have with Heineken is that this agreement will terminate until October 22nd, until 2022. So right now that's where we are. We cannot do anything regarding plan Bs or whatever. Obviously, a scenario where Heineken is independent from the Coke system, for us, beer is an important element because, as we said, most of the retail system in Brazil sells beer and soft drinks together. So there's an important element of maintaining a low cost per unit case in terms of the distribution level.
Perfect, Hector. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank
you. And at this time, I would like to turn the call back over to Mr. Hector Trevino for any additional or closing remarks.
Thank you, everyone, for your interest in Coca-Cola FEMSA, and as always, you have our doors and telephone lines open for any future questions. Thank you.
And that will conclude today's call. We thank you for your participation.